Part 5. Three may keep a secret if two of them are dead. Benjamin Franklin. The Favorite Son. The ship's timbers grated against the wharf, and Leo took a deep breath of that good England air. Felt pure after the smogs of Adua, felt honest. There was quite a crowd on the docks to welcome him and his bride to Austenholme, and the weather might have been grey, but their smiles were sunny. Someone was waving a battle flag, the crossed hammers of Angland, ragged from action. It made him think of Red Hill, of the fight on the bridge, of the men marching to victory. It made him impatient to march again. "They love you," said Savine, staring at the cheering people. "Well, you know how it is. They love men who win fights." "Leo, they really love you." "Not sure I've ever seen you surprised before." "I have seen angry mobs and needy throngs, but I cannot say I was ever actually liked."
"I bet they'll like you now."
She hesitantly raised a gloved hand and waved. The cheers grew louder. A little boy jumped up and down on the quayside so wildly, Leo worried he might fall in the sea. Savine laughed and blew him a kiss, and he went so red he looked like he might pass out.
"By the fates," she whispered, "I think they do."
Alas, not everyone was so easily pleased. Mustard and Clencher advanced with weighty frowns the moment the gangplank clattered across from ship to quay. Short of diving into the brine, there was no escape.
"We need to talk, Your Grace," snarled Mustard.
"More troubles over taxes," growled Clencher.
"The damned closed council have no shame."
"Nor pity. Someone has to draw a bloody line."
Leo winced. He'd hoped at least to make it to the Lord Governor's residence before the bureaucratic bog closed over his head again.
"We'll get to that, my lords, but could I first present my wife, Lady Savine Danbrock?"
"You must be Lord Clencher." She slipped gracefully forward to offer her hand. "I do like your boots. Are those new?"
"Well, as it happens, Your Grace," grumbled Clencher as he bent to kiss it.
He'd clearly been aiming to disapprove of Leo's choice of wife, but was already finding it difficult.
"I know your father, of course."
Savine laughed as though he was being hugely charming.
"I can only apologise for that, but I am not my father. I am your Lady Governor, and I am here to do everything I can to help. How is Lady Lisette?"
Clencher's bushy brows shot up.
"You know my wife?"
"Only by reputation, but I am keen to put that right. My friend Tilda Dan Ruxted is her niece, of course, and speaks so very highly of her. I understand she was having troubles with her back."
"Well, she—"
"I took the liberty of bringing some salts that I am told can work wonders."
And Zuri produced a jar of coloured powder from her bag.
"That's immensely thoughtful,"
breathed Clencher, utterly disarmed.
"And Lord Mustard, what a magnificent moustache. I brought you a newly printed volume on the heraldry of Angland and Starrickland. Do you have that one?"
Mustard stroked the binding as Zuri passed it to him.
"Why, no, but it's always been a particular interest of mine."
"Such a happy chance."
As if anything Savine did was by accident. She smiled even more sweetly, holding out both hands.
"And you must be Durand, Leo's old friend and comrade."
Durand had been giving her quite the frown for some reason, but now he started to soften.
"Yes.
I heard you had all the brains around here, but Leo, why didn't you tell me how very handsome he is?"
"Well,"
Leo cleared his throat,
"I suppose that's not the sort of thing a man notices."
He watched as Zuri magicked one packet after another from her bottomless bag. Savine had brought gifts for everyone, and not just any old rubbish, the kind a dear friend would bring on a special occasion. In a moment, she changed the mood from angry suspicion to baffled delight.
"It took me years to tame the old dogs,"
murmured Leo's mother from the corner of her mouth. "She has them eating out of her hand the moment she steps off the boat." "I own a stake in the armory here in Ostenholm," Savine was saying, "but I have never had the chance to visit. Perhaps one of you two magnates might be kind enough to show me the way?"
"It would be my honour,"
shouted Mustred, offering his elbow.
"My particular pleasure, your grace,"
shouted Clencher, offering his, and she glided off with an old lord on either side, both gormlessly grinning as they competed for her attention. For maybe the first time since he took his mother's place as Lord Governor, Leo was free of their demands. Free to limp over to his cheering people and press hands, slap shoulders, return their beaming smiles. Free to actually be a leader.
"Bloody hell, Leia."
Antaup stared down at a shining pair of new spurs with his family crest on the buckle.
"I think I'm in love."
"I know,"
said Leo, smiling at Savine. Everyone was smiling at her right then.
"I think I am too."
Steel on steel. By the dead, how Leo loved that sound. Sweeter than birdsong. He caught Durin's sword on his, blades grinding, then ringing as he flung his friend away, pressed in with a couple of cuts, and made him stumble back, only just keeping his balance on the wet grass.
"Better."
Durand was grinning as he found his stance again.
"Much better."
"Oh, that's nothing," said Leo, grinning too. It was good to be back with him, very good, and the rest of the boys, of course.
The leg was still sore, but he was learning how to manage it. He'd strapped a belt around it under his trousers just above the knee, made it stiffer but a lot more solid. Durand tried to circle, but Leo watched, waited, forced him to circle back the other way. He'd had to change his style, far less aggression, much more patience. Juran darted in, but Leo was ready, parried once, twice, a careful shuffle to shift his weight, then a pinpoint jab, and another, and he sent Juran stumbling back the way he'd come. Savine had told him to look at his leg as simply a new challenge. Overcoming challenges was what he did, after all. And she was right. When wasn't she? Juran came on again, but he was tired from all that dancing. Leo parried the first thrust, sidestepped the second to let it slip past him, then twisted, swung, flicked the back of Durin's leg as he blundered past, and sent him rolling across the lawn with a despairing squawk. Antaup punched the air.
"A touch to the young lion!"
"Damn it!"
Durin propped himself on one elbow and spat grass.
"I take it the leg's feeling better.
Far from healed."
Leo bared his teeth at the pain as he pulled Durin to his feet.
"But I have to be ready."
"For what?"
asked Antaup, waggling his eyebrows.
"You're a married man. It's a different kind of sword work that's called for."
Whitewater Jin smirked.
"Aye, your battle's in the bedroom now."
They all laughed, but they'd no idea how right they were. Leo thought Savine might have loosened one of his teeth last night.
"How are the men?"
he asked. Durand was trying to scrub the grassy stain from his fencing jacket.
"I was going to disband two regiments. Now we're on a peacetime footing."
"Don't."
Antaup narrowed his eyes.
"Expecting trouble?"
"It's possible."
"From who?" asked Glarwood, always spoiling for a fight. "Not the bloody Northmen again. Or are you thinking about Dagoska?"
"A good deal closer to home."
They all looked at him, curious, excited. Leo knew there was nowhere safer than the gardens of the Lord Governor's residence, no one he trusted more than these four, but even so, he felt the need to draw his friends in close. Every time he whispered the words, every time he told someone new, it became that little bit more real, that little bit more dangerous.
"From the closed council."
Juran's eyes went wide.
"You can't be serious."
"It's chaos in Adua. Far worse than I dreamed it could be. Trouble with the Breakers, trouble with the nobles. The closed council is out of control. King Orso is out of his depth. They're throwing away all our principles. Everything we fought for, everything my father fought for." He was making himself angrier and angrier, and his friends' faces were getting angrier with him.
They're dragging the country into the fucking sewer. Did you hear what happened to Fedor Dan Wetterland? Did you hear what happened to me?
Durand exchanged a worried glance with Glawood.
We heard something about it.
Thrown out of the Lord's Round, snapped Leo, for telling the truth.
Jin ground one big fist into his palm.
Wish I'd been there.
Next time you will be, said Leo, putting a hand on his shoulder. We can't let the bastards get away with it. There comes a point when talking about a better world just isn't enough, when good men have to bloody stand up and fight for it.
Damn right, growled Glawood. Damn right.
Fight the closed council, though.
Durand had that disapproving look. The one he had when Leo suggested a reckless charge, but worse.
Fight the king? Fight for the king!
Durand's doubt was making Leo doubt, and that only made him insist the harder.
To free him from these bloody leeches, these bloody bureaucrats, to put the union back the way it should be.
Everyone looked convinced, except Durand. He looked less convinced than ever.
But you're talking about...
He dropped his voice to an urgent whisper.
You're talking about civil war, Leo. You're talking about... Well...
The word treason went unsaid, but it hung over the lawn like a bad smell even so.
There has to be another way. Was this the Lady Governor's idea? They say she's the most ambitious. This is my idea.
Well, his and Isher's and Huygens and Barazin's.
If Savine knew about it, she'd be bloody livid. She can't know, and neither can my mother. Not yet. But when the time's right to tell them, they'll see it has to be done.
Or at any rate, the whole thing would be too far along to stop.
So it's not just you looking for a fight. They brought the fight to us, snapped Leo,
and Antaup gave a grunt of agreement.
They left us to die in their war,
and Jin gave a growl of support.
They made us pay for their war.
Glawood nodded along harder with each point.
They're bleeding us white with their taxes.
As Leo convinced them, he convinced himself.
They're hanging our friends. They're shitting on our most solemn principles. Bastards, snarled Antaup,
shoving back that lock of hair so it fell straight into his face again.
No one wants a war, said Leo,
even though his heart beat faster at the sound of the word.
We all hope it won't happen, but if there's no other choice, we have to be ready. Can I count on you?
"'Course you can,' said Glawood, throwing his heavy arm around Leo's shoulder.
"'For anything,' said Antaup, gripping Glawood around the back. "'Always,' said Jin, hooking Antaup around the neck. "'Durand?'
Leo held out his arm, beckoning with the fingers. But Durand still stood, rubbing worriedly at his jaw.
"'Durand?' coaxed Glawood.
"'Durand, Durand, Durand!' wheedled Antaup.
Leo caught his eye and gave him his most wounded look.
You wouldn't turn your back on me, would you?
Never!
And Durand's smile burst out like the sun from behind a cloud. A troubled smile, but a smile even so, and he threw one arm around Leo's shoulders and the other around Jin's and closed the circle.
I'll be there, Leo, whenever you need me, always. But you have to... That means a lot.
Leo felt tears in his eyes, and he dragged his friends close into a sweaty huddle.
That means more than you can know.
Durand gave a shocked whoop as Leo shoved him over onto his back and plucked his sword out of the turf.
Now defend yourself, you stringy bastard!